Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. My name is Stuart Horsfield, and I'm delighted to say we're making a return to the centre circle. We have an incredibly talented author with us to discuss their new book. Always good to venture into the centre circle, and as usual in the centre circle with a distinct lack of pace and endurance, I have my two co-hosts for such an occasion. First of all, Mr. Gary Thacker. Gary, welcome back to the centre circle.
Thank you, mate, and well done for identifying the key characteristics of my game, lack of pace and lack of endurance. Yeah, great to be back on and talking about a fantastic book. It's a subject that probably a lot of fans might not know a lot about, but if they read the book, this book, they will, because the detail in it is absolutely stunning, and it's well written by a guy that we all know very well.
Agreed. We do all know very well. And you're absolutely right. It's one of those, certainly reading the book, it's one of those competitions where it always just sits sort of in the periphery of your mind. You're always aware of it, but you don't, I didn't. Anyway, let's put it that way. I didn't actually know an awful lot about it. I just was constantly aware of it.
Yeah, very much so.
And obviously the pacey one of this midfield trio, Mr. Stephen Scragg. Stephen,
no, I'm
welcome.
The one that goes absent without leave, leaving everyone else to mop up the rubbish at the back.
Yeah, but when you play, though, you really play. When you're here, you're outstanding.
The kind of maverick who won't track back. That's.
I don't want to call you the luxury podcast co-host, but I think you might have just got the role of the luxury podcast co-host. Like the Glenn Hoddle of podcast.
Yeah, come the World Cup of podcasts, I'm getting about 17 minutes from the bench. That's about it.
When we're 2-0 down and need a miracle.
Yeah, something like that.
Obviously, looking forward to tonight's episode. Again, it's something that we're going to get into, and your club, and obviously Gary's as well. it's something that where you do have a fair relationship with the subject of this book.
Yes, but a belated one, really. You know, for my club in particular, you know, it was one of these competitions that we, you know, it was other clubs that won it. You know, we were winning the senior trophies. We were neglecting the junior ranks, and you know, surprisingly, in a way, you know, we didn't win this until what, 96. You know, we've gone on to win it another three times since. But yes, we were serial underachievers in this tournament for quite some time.
That's good. That actually, I've made a note to come back to that. To discuss why you think that might well be. Anyway, enough of our inabilities to control the midfield of this podcast. We'll get to the person who really matters. Today's guest is the host of the wonderful The Football Library podcast, which we've all been on and had the pleasure of appearing on. He's written this, like we say, this fantastic new book, From Kids to Champions, The History of the FA Youth Cup. It is due out May 2nd to purchase, but it is already available to pre-order. And it coincides almost perfectly with this year's Youth Cup final, which is on the 30th of April between Manchester United and Nottingham Forest. It is our absolute pleasure to introduce essentially the pace, the endurance and the content of this podcast, Mr. Johnny Brick. Johnny, welcome to the podcast.
I love this podcast, and it's delightful to speak to you all. On the Football Library, I've had all of you in, and some of you three times now. So he might not have a lack of pace, but Gary has been with me three times, and his Chelsea book. Can I just plug his Chelsea book out of the blue, or am I not allowed?
Do it. No. Anything goes here. You can even be slanderous if you want. I just blame everyone else. It's fine.
I will. One thing I won't do is libel or slander anyone, let alone Liverpool Football Club or Chelsea Football Club, because fans of both clubs would love this book, From Kids to Champions. It is I think we share the Duncan Ulner cover. We've all had books with Duncan Ulner doing the cover, and he's done really well here. So hopefully, and I say in the acknowledgements, it pops off the shelf or the digital library. And Stu, I remember you saying you wrote one because the others did. I think I've written this because you all have as well. So it's nice that I can call myself a writer, an author as well. And I would rather be nowhere else to kick off the press for this book than talking to you all.
That's great. I will, before we start and ask you about the book, if that's the genuine case as to why you've written it, you've got to beware that these guys just keep churning them out. I only wrote one because Stephen had written one at that point. That was it. And then he decides to go and write more. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me with this. I need to slow down at some point.
I don't suppose we're allowed to plug Steve's forthcoming book either. Because yeah. He wouldn't want me to talk about his book. Or indeed, Stu, at the end of the year, yours.
Yeah, they do keep coming. But like I say, I blame Gary. But that's just how it is. Anyway, we're here to talk about your book, Johnny. Like Gary will have churned a book out by the time we finish this podcast. He'll have his idea and notes written down already. Your book, From Kids to Champions, like we said, the history of the FA Youth Cup, for me, and obviously Gary mentioned it as well, it's a competition that has always, not only has always been there, but as I've always been aware of, but it's certainly something that I, until I read your book and then a bit more research for the podcast, I actually knew very little about it, very little indeed. But like I say, it's always been there. It's a really strange sort of concept to be aware of such an omnipresent tournament, but actually know very little about it. So for you, the book, what does it cover? What's it about? What's the content? And also your motivation for this particular competition.
If I am a librarian of a football library, it behoves me to write a book. So about a year into the library, and I think I'd spoken to all three of you at that point, I was thinking I can come up to Pitch Publishing with an idea for a book that doesn't exist. And I don't know when it hit upon me, but it was as if I saw it on the shelves. Okay, it's the history of the Youth Cup. It's the Busby Babes. It's Chelsea's kids from the last 10 years who have won it 8 times in the last 10 years. And United have won it 10 times. They're going for their 11th. On top of that, it would have enabled me to do a season following the Youth Cup, which, like the FA Cup, starts with tiny, tiny, tiny clubs, opens up in the qualifying rounds, and then the big teams come in the third round, and usually one of the big teams wins it. But it was a voyage for me because I wanted to know more about it. As you three may know, the best thing to do if you want to know about something is actually do the legwork. And I thought, well, 80,000 words is a good cutoff point for the book. Jane and Paul at Pitch were great, saying, yep, write it, do it. Got it done in January. Knowing that the Youth Cup final was at the end of April. And it's going to be at Old Trafford this year. And it occurred to me today that United have not had a wonderful season. So are they going to go all in and try and create this class of 22? Because Chelsea could also have gone all in and had the class of 22. But unfortunately, Chelsea's best players are now playing for the senior team for reasons Gary may come to later on. But it's a chronological take going right the way from the Busby Babes in the 1950s, about which everyone knows. So when you think of the Youth Cup, you think of the Busby Babes. And then as you go forwards through time, you have what West Ham were doing with the Academy of Football. Crystal Palace, what Malcolm Allison did is not even that well known. Vance Hilaire in his book didn't really touch on it. And then we get to the modern era with the money. And the other motivation for the book was that we're now outside EU jurisdiction. It's very difficult to get a work permit to come and work in Britain because we're in control of our borders. And so I just thought, with the FA wanting success in the Qatar World Cup, don't forget the clock. You remember the clock? Greg Dyke's clock? We're ticking towards that clock. But as we're seeing now, the best argument for success in England is success in the club. And what we saw 20-odd years ago, a domination of the club. Remember Howard Wilkinson was in charge of the blueprint for football at the end of the 90s. And one of the things he essentially did was he broke up Lillishall into several satellite centres. So you have talented kids in the northwest, the northeast, London, the southeast, all living 90 minutes from the centre. So if you live more than 90 minutes from Liverpool, Chelsea, Man U, you have to move. You have to move house. And so it fosters a better environment. And now in the England team, we're finally seeing it, albeit with players coming through the pyramid. I just thought it was a really good thing for me to do because all we had to go off for the Youth Cup was the FA's own website and a well-known online encyclopedia. So skipping forwards and backwards through time, I describe round by round from those early rounds up until I've gone up to the last 16 because my deadline was January, but it means that around the time that the final occurs at Old Trafford on April 30, 2 days before the book comes out, it means I can sort of promote the book by concentrating on this final, which United really should win. And so we'll see lots of articles about the Busby Babes and the class of 92. And hey, it might be good for Man United to win something this year.
It's great. Like I say, I always like these that opening sort of question to hear people's motivations for writing. But more importantly, it's the passion that 99% of the time comes out in the topic that they've written about. And it has to be a passion if you're going to, you know, writing a book is a labour of love and it requires passion. Just one quick question, though. In my research, 38,000, I believe, although you're the expert, is the record attendance. Based on what you've just said about Manchester United and Old Trafford, do you foresee, if this is the only silverware that the club win this season, do you think that attendance could well, or do you think they will, with based on their love affair with the competition, and we will touch on that later on, but do you think there's potential there that Old Trafford will be rocking for that final?
It depends how much they open, because they need the police. As okay. Not the band, the police. They need people to staff the ground. So I don't know if they're going to do like what they do at Wembley when some of the lesser professional clubs play. I was at Wembley just on Sunday to see Rotherham play Sutton, and they got 30,000 people, but they'd shut the top tier. I don't know how many fans can get into certain areas of Old Trafford, but knowing that Man U are all about numbers and clicks and records, I think that that is something that Richard Arnold, the new executive vice chairman, should go for. And there is one key bit of personnel. There's one key person in the Nottingham Forest dugout, and that's Warren Joyce, a person who was the reserve manager when your Lingards, your Pogbas, and your Ravel Morrisons were trying to get into the first team 10 years ago. Warren Joyce was there. So if anyone can, and I don't know if he knows the Manchester United coach whose name I wrote down because I don't know, it is Travis Binion. I don't know if he knows Travis, but if he does, perhaps Forrest will spring a surprise. But as for the attendance, probably, yeah.
Excellent. I hope so. Like, I have an absolute passion for youth football and the promotion of that. Gary, there we go. There's our opening for the start of the podcast. It is, like we said, you know, we keep saying it's a competition that's been around for a while, and we will get into the history of it. But it's like again, maybe this accentuates the point, as you know, as John has just said there. There's always so little to read about this competition. It's there, but you can't find any of it. It's almost ethereal, or it's almost like it doesn't exist, but you know it exists.
Yeah, you're right. Although strange enough, it's probably less the case now than it was 20, 30 years ago. In fact, this morning, because I knew Chelsea were playing Forest yesterday, so I'll go and have to look at all the scores from the morning. So I couldn't find listed the result listed at all on this app. And it goes down to, you know, I mean, it's a very comprehensive thing. It goes down to the goal on the Premier League. I got that far, and I think this is not going to be on here. So I think it's been more in the public eye now than it used before, not least because of social media and that sort of thing. And I think the problem it has, as it sort of elbowed its way into people's consciousness, is it's also butting up against another part of a football club, which is the women's football as well, which is also becoming more and more important and more recognised by fans. I have to say, in sort of the early years of the competition, I mean, I'm old enough to know the early years of the competition. I didn't really know a great deal about it until I read Johnny's book. It was a Chelsea Woodward that all those many years ago. And it's something, you know, we used to have when I used to be watching football, you know, about first team reserve, and that was pretty much it. But obviously now, you know, with the advent of different age underage teams as they sort of progress through the pyramid at the clubs, it's becoming more and more important. But as I say, at the same time as it's forced its way into people's consciousness, it's also having to share a little bit extra space with the women's football as well. So it's I don't know, it's always been seen as like a distant neighbour to the first team. And that's breaking down now because of, you know, Jenny mentioned this earlier about our players coming through from the youth teams into the first team, especially at the bigger clubs, more often than it used to be the case.
Stephen, something we've chatted about on and off for what feels like forever now is people's not falling out of love with the game at the highest level, but almost going to non-league football to find the original joy and the original motivation of why we love the game. Do you think the FA Youth Cup retains a little bit of that? People can go and watch it almost for its purity, its players playing, whether it's for first team contracts, although a lot of them will be tied to contracts already, but it almost feels like it has that sense of purity that non-league football has.
I think it did. Whether it still does is open to debate. With the influx of players from all over the world, sourced sometimes, from under the nose of the clubs that have unearthed them. So yes and no. I'd probably say answers to that. It's become such big. I don't know. It's become something of a kind of like a churning point where a lot of clubs have needed to kind of they hoover up and they work as a magnet. Liverpool are no different in that respect. Is that we've hoovered up players like Harvey Elliott would be a prime example of that. It's the case of the biggest clubs, even at youth level now, will hoover up talent from other clubs at the drop of a hat. The picking up club players at 14, 15 who have shown some promise and swooped on them. I forget the name of the Fulham player now that Liverpool have almost got on deadline day and they're reputedly going to go and get him again, go for him again in the summer. So, it has become big bucks. But within that, you're finding that there is another side of that, is that there are more players from youth level making it, I think. One of the things I found online when I was looking towards this podcast was that, where do the players go? And I always find this age group fascinating, because of the divergence of where players go and what is to become their fate. And it was just the way it kind of unfolds. And the way that you could chart back to kind of like the 60s and the 70s and how many of those players went on to big careers and became internationals. And if anything, it's not diminishing, it's increasing. And this is, you're getting players like Jadon Sancho, who was part of, on the books at Man City and then went off to Dortmund and now he's at Manchester United. But the money and the time and the energy that even the biggest checkbook clubs are putting into that level now, and within that, that's grace on one side of it, but on the other side of it, it's kind of like swiping the crown jewels of the smaller clubs or the more modest clubs, should we call it? I hate that phrase, the smaller clubs. The more modest clubs, should we call them? For a player that's swooped up by a Liverpool, a Manchester United, a Man City, a Chelsea, Tottenham, all of these clubs, for them not to be able to kind of make it at a smaller club and then move on, there's a lot of learning that goes, I don't know, it becomes lost. So it gives and it takes from my perspective.
I'm all right with that. I like that answer and that analogy. Grand theft, we'll call it, but that's okay. So Johnny, well, the first sort of chapter in your book is the 50s and the Busby Babes. Now, bear with me while I put this into context. But when I was studying as a mature student, and I was doing the history and culture, I did a master's in the history and culture of sport, and I just did all mine through the prism of football. And one of them was a literature review on a book. And I picked the class of 92 as the actual book and text that I would do. But at the beginning of that, there is so much information about Matt Busby and his sort of love affair, almost his obsession with the FA Youth Cup that I was completely unaware of. And I think the first five editions of the FA Youth Cup. Yeah. And it's almost the credibility of the competition was up and running from minute one.
Certainly. Although it was odd that there was a chap, Joe Richards, I think his name is off the top of my head, who did go to the Football League to try and get them interested and was turned down, and then they invented the League Cup. So Joe then found favour with the FA to, as the FA website does say, had the foresight to realise that here was an idea with legs. The FA had actually begun a youth championship in the 40s. Perhaps with the knowledge that Manchester United had their own athletic club called New Jack, and they played two former trainees in their match against Fulham, and that record still stands. I was actually talking to Sammy McElroy, who's got a great book out at the moment, and I said to Sammy, surely Man United managers must play a youth product now, because if they break that chain, they will be forever be the manager who broke the chain. And Chelsea are doing well. They're up to about 200 in a row, having an academy graduate in the squad. Man United have had 4,100 consecutive games, and it's all because of the way they treat Matt Busby. He is the saint of Manchester United, and he certainly found it important in the 40s, as you know, Stu, just to get the best players from the Northeast. And if they didn't make it at Manchester United, they made it at Blackpool, Preston, Bury, and on and on and on. And I was thinking today how in the 70s and 80s, United started importing a lot of non-academy players because you had an outsider coming in. You had Tommy Dock and Ron Atkinson, who wanted their type of player. And then Alex Ferguson came in and almost in an embarrassed manner thought, well, we've got to get the academy back. We need the best player in the area, not just the best player on the street or in the postcode. And having Eric Harrison as a coach and having Brian Kidd work with the kids as well, nominative deterministically, it just meant that United could build the academy back. And at the same time, Stu, with the class of 92, they sweated the brand. I mean, they were ahead of Chelsea and Liverpool, unfortunately, chaps, in commercialising how they made money. And they sweated the brand. And so the class of 92 is just brand reinforcement of, and so they could just brand. Robbie Savage is on the cover of the book, could well be the class of 92 if he wants to be dragged in, but because he didn't make it at United and Butt, Scholes, Neville, Beckham and Giggs did. Did I get them all there? It's such, they are the class of 92, and because they knew that Nobby Stiles was their coach, Nobby Stiles was one of the Busby Babes as well. So there was that lineage. And that's why I think that United being in the final on April 30, I'm sure they know, because it has been drummed into them that they represent Manchester United Football Club, not just because every time Gary Neville opens his mouth on telly, they are told that. But Nick Cox, who's the head of the academy there, who was at Watford and is now at Man United, he knows that they have to represent the employer.
It's interesting, just because this struck me when I was reading this part of the book, Johnny's book. Obviously, when this started, this run of Manchester United started, I mean, we're talking about when there wasn't any subs or just one sub. Now we're looking at a situation where, I think, is it next season, you have seven substitutes?
So, well, at the World Cup, Gary, they're going to be allowed the whole squad.
But with regard to this youth player run, sticking a youth player in now, I mean, or, you know, with five or six subs, it's pretty. Does it mean anything anymore? Does it mean anything? It's all right. I'm sure the guy's picked up it on merit. I'm saying I'm sure he's picked on merit. Because as you say, I think the first guy who doesn't put one in is going to get castigated for it. It's almost become like a badge of honour now. You've got to put one in. How can be players, all right? You've got to put one in. But I think when you've got six or seven substitutes, it becomes, it's less of an issue. When you've only got one sub or two subs, I think it's entirely creditable. But it, it's been diluted because of the amount of players you can have sitting on your bench now.
Well, certainly. But in the same argument, yes, the Youth Cup has been slightly devalued because young kids such as Harvey Vale at Chelsea are able to represent the first team. And you have the amazing stat that Tom Heaton made his debut for Manchester United in a dead rubber. Was it 15 years after he came through the academy? So in a way, that's a bit of contract stipulation, perhaps. But yeah, there's more personnel. But at the same time, and we'll get to Chelsea later, I'm sure, there's less of a likelihood that your average under 18 from Chelsea will graduate to play at Stamford Bridge unless they're a centre-back next season.
We'll see about that. We'll talk about that later, Johnny.
Yeah.
I will just stick with you a sec, Gary, because it's funny about how, you know, looking at the chapters in Johnny's book and looking at those sort of early rounds, and a couple of those finals were against Wolves, and then Wolves are the first team to win it outside of Manchester United. And it's sort of, at that particular time, it seemed to, the FA Youth Cup almost reflected what was happening in the senior game. And, you know, Johnny will know this better than me. And now it's starting to, again, when you look at past winner, current winners or contemporary winners of this millennium, we've almost gone back to that. But there seems to have been a lost period in the middle where it didn't quite so much reflect what was happening at the senior level.
I think you're absolutely right. And then again, this point that Johnny brings out well in the book. I mean, I did a little bit of research this morning. There was, in the last dozen or so finals, the only sort of, well, there's only been two sort of unusual names, shall we say, non-top team names. That was Sheffield United lost to Man United in 2011, and Norwich, who actually won it, beating Chelsea in 2013. But aside from that, you know, you're talking Chelsea, Man United, Liverpool, Manchester City, Aston Villa last year. But yeah, I think it has become this. And this is, I think this also highlights the importance of how the link between the youth players who play at this sort of age group, this youth level now, is becoming a quicker feed into the first team. And, you know, as Johnny alluded to, we were talking earlier about Harvey Vale. One of the reasons he wasn't playing the game yesterday when Chelsea lost to Forest in the semi-final was that he's probably sitting in Madrid now with the first team. And so they get that sort of drift across, and some players are playing in both of these things at the same time. So there's also a ridiculous amount of workload going on some players, young players' backs. I mean, just to give you an example, over in Spain, we've got this guy called Pedri, who plays Barcelona. He's a generational talent, and he's only 19 now. And he's played about a season and a half for Barcelona. He's played the European Championships. He's played for their youth team. It will definitely be in the World Cup, a star in the World Cup. Kid's 19, he's playing a ridiculous amount of games. And, you know, you just hope it doesn't get burnt out, because you can see this happen with so many players who've flitted around. And some players, like, I mean, it's a question if Bale will be on the bench against Real Madrid, but he'll be with the squad. And there's still the travelling involved. We're asking a big workload of these kids.
Just touching on this, Stephen, we're going to talk about Liverpool and Chelsea. We just seem to be talking about all the time. It's just something that struck me there as we were chatting, and we looked at Matt Busby and his relationship and the importance. Can I ask you, did Bill Shankly also see that importance, or that there seems to be a, I don't want to say a glaring void, because you will know far better than me, but that he, to me, from what I know, would be someone who would seem to embrace the ethos of the FA Youth Cup and what it, and the potential it could bring for the club, but it just either didn't seem to happen through results, luck, whatever it is, or it maybe wasn't quite prioritised as much as it was by Manchester United and Matt Busby.
It was never prioritised as much as Matt Busby did. There was a desire to win it. There was a desire to do well and desire to bring youth players through. You know, we did lose finals in 63 and 72. Tommy Smith was part of the side that lost in 63. Phil Thompson was part of the side that lost in 72. So, you know, there was a desire to do so. But that you know, early Manchester United dominance, you know, it's almost kind of like Real Madrid winning the first five European Cups. You know, they hit the floor running. They were in exactly the right place at the right time. And they had the structure together. You know, Matt Busby built something, you know, amazing with his Manchester United. And that stretches back to kind of like taking the job on, you know, coming out of the war, basically. You know, they're a very ordinary football club, you know, and where they'd had, I think, one rise of prominence. they probably, but before the Second World War, they'd spent as much as, if not more, of the history in the second division than they had in the first. So, you know, Busby built a legacy that was built, you know, it was constructed on youth. And, you know, he set in line this ethos that was, in essence, impossible to replicate for all of his successors up to Alex Ferguson. And thus, you know, history is kind of repeating itself in that all of Alex Ferguson's successors are finding it very difficult to match what he and, you know, the class of 92 did in that respect. But yeah, at Liverpool, you know, we had our young players that come through. Shankly was much more attuned to trying to bring young players through than Bob Paisley ultimately was. You know, Paisley was much more of the now. And, you know, it was probably a bit of overlap, actually, with Liverpool, was that they started to do a formative version of what goes on now in sourcing young players from elsewhere. You know, a lot of Liverpool's best players throughout the 70s and into the 80s were brought in from lower down the footballing food chain and kind of like turned into fine players. You've got to understand as well is that this is all at a point in time when there aren't necessarily youth teams as such. You know, the football tended to revolve around a first team, a reserve team, an A team and a B team. And then you would have the kids kicking the ball around the training pitch. So the teams that took to the field in the name of trying to win the Youth Cup back then weren't exactly playing together all the time. They were often playing with older professionals in the various, you know, stages of progression and going through, trying to work towards the first team. So, yeah, you know, going back to the original question. Yeah, no, Liverpool very much had an ethos on youth under Shankly, but it wasn't as focused as Manchester United's was in bringing through young talent, very local young talent. For Liverpool, it was identifying the right player for the system that they were playing. And that's always been the Liverpool way. The Liverpool way has always been slightly different to the Manchester United way, is that it wasn't always about the brightest young talent. It was about identifying the right player to fit the system and to fit the ethos and the team that they were playing. So the approaches were different.
I have to say, you've been very magnanimous this evening. Based on recent podcast recordings and the alienation of most English and British clubs, you've been very magnanimous tonight. I'm very impressed.
Only at youth level. Only at youth level.
Whatever it takes, whatever the reason. So, Johnny, obviously, you know, the book is, you know, it's fantastic. It's a wonderfully detailed overview, in-depth discussion about the competition. For you, as the author and the ultimate knowledge here, when would you say was the peak period of the FA Youth Cup?
I thought about this. I don't think it had a peak. I think it's been a flat line pretty much for the last 60 years. I guess in the 1960s, and I'm sorry to say this, but there were fewer leisure options. So perhaps people were more likely to go to watch the youth team. In the 60s and 70s. And it coalesced around certain groups. I loved reading about Crystal Palace and Millwall because there was a lot of overlap. I spoke to a guy called Merv Payne, who wrote a great book called Ordinary Boys about Millwall winning it. So Nottingham Forest haven't won it. And at the time, Nottingham Forest were winning the European Cup. But in the late 70s, Millwall were doing really, really well because they had people scouring the entire south of England for the best kids, bringing them to Millwall. And there really were, I think there were 11 captains, one of the guys who was interviewed for Ordinary Boys was saying. At the same time, the only team to win back-to-back youth cups was Malcolm Allison's Crystal Palace team. And that really was like Busby. And I don't think this should be forgotten because even in Vance Hilaire's book, it is. But what Mal Allison did was he germinated, he grew his own team. And they were known as the team of the 80s because they had dominated the Youth Cup. Kenny Sampson was so good that he came into the first team as a teenager and he became the senior pro at 20 years old, who was able to welcome and induct almost all the kids, like Vance Hilaire, into the team. And they got a weird... And these kids... At child level, this was the day where you could play football in the streets. They would play with and against each other and then they played with and against each other for Millwall and Palace. And they were the two teams remarkably far ahead. And given the hooliganism in the senior game in the 70s, I would think that the peak for the Youth Cup would have probably been, just by what I've read, the late 70s. And it's incredible because there was a new team winning it every year. Ipswich did well for a couple of seasons because they had the investment from the Kobolds. Blackburn, of course, won the Youth Cup in the late 90s because they had the investment. And nowadays, the Youth Cup it's another trophy. And it was interesting talking to Ian Doyle, whom, Stephen, you may know from the Liverpool Echo, who has covered the clubs for Liverpool and Everton for 35 years. And he was saying how that, understandably, if you've got LFC TV screening the Liverpool games, we perhaps won't talk about the fact that, and this is a good fact, Liverpool were 3-0 up in the quarterfinal after 70 minutes and Chelsea got them back 4-3 in normal time in the quarterfinal. But fans are now as ahead of the game as journalists are. The fans know which players are coming through. Oakley Kanonier is a Liverpool Academy player. He'll probably get a pro deal, a senior deal. And that's not just because he chucked the ball to Alexander-Arnold for that game 3 years ago against Barcelona. But we're seeing a lot of kids. It is still a popular tournament. I don't know if it's more or less popular, but certainly among the clubs, among people who are scholars at 16 and 17, they know the Youth Cup has a pedigree. They know about the Busby Babes. I'm sure they're more keen just to get into the top level. But I will have a think about that, and I will try and get a better answer and tell your listeners when there was a peak. But I can't think of one. I think it's a flat line. It's been no more nor less exciting, except maybe the 70s. Because of the novelty and people going down, probably because it was safer. I'm not going to say it was safer to watch a Millwall Crystal Palace under-18s game. It probably was.
It probably was. Gary, something that I do want to touch on, and we'll probably come back to this as well, but the buzz around a youth team, you know, a good youth team, or the buzz around players or a player who suddenly appears or is breaking through at youth level and then in and around the first team level. There's nothing quite like it for, and Steve, you know, said it, not, I can't remember the word Steve would use, not a smaller club. What, Stephen, what word did you use? Not smaller clubs, what was it?
Was it more modest?
Modest.
Modest.
Thank you.
Less a celebrity.
There we go. So the more the more modest clubs, it almost, you know, that player that, and again, Steve mentioned about, you know, getting hoovered up, but there's always something when a homegrown player, young homegrown player, just starts to capture the imagination, starts to gain attention, and people start to go and watch it and have a look at this player and try and be there at the very genesis of his career.
I think that's true, Matt, yeah. And, I mean, Chelsea always had this reputation that for donkey's years, the only players come through the youth team the first team was John Terry, and obviously that's changed very much in recent times. And now we've seen players like Mason Mount coming through. And because of my Chelsea book, I've got a sort of a lot of Chelsea followers and follow a lot of Chelsea Twitter accounts. And there's always talk about Mason Mount, how important he is to Chelsea, and because it was Chelsea from a kid, literally from, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. And it does make it more. I don't know where to make it more joyous. It's too sort of fancified a word, but it makes it. There's more complete feeling about it, you know. And Chelsea have always been a sort of buying club until quite recently. Although youth type players coming through were very rare. So I think it is. And you know, the old hackneyed phrase of, you know, he's one of our own. I think does mean something, even though it's a bit of a cliche these days.
It for you, Stephen, as a Liverpool fan, and you know, and Gary's mentioned there sort of John Terry, but you know, Liverpool to me, not a Liverpool fan, you know, like yourself, but were you either growing up or now more mature, shall we say? Do you still get that excitement when a player's mentioned, or you know, a youth, you know, player who's starting to just gain the attention at youth team level, does it still hold that level of excitement for your club? Or maybe a better question, as I'm just thinking about it now, do you get more excited at the prospect of signing an established international, or are you more excited about the prospect of a new up-and-coming youth team player?
Oh, no, you always want one of your own to come through. You know, that's where it comes down to. You always want to see one of your own. And that's strange with the Liverpool thing, was that way back in the 80s, you know, we had a poor track record of bringing players through. It wasn't until Steve Iwuyi was coached back to Anfield by Kenny Dalglish that, you know, things started to click into place as far as our own youth setup. Everton were infinitely better at bringing young products through. So, yeah, for Liverpool, you know, it was weird as well, because from the terraces as well, there was a certain, I don't know, it was a bit like we spoke about on a podcast not too long ago about when managers kind of like have their own kids as players, and you know, being put in their own player, put their own kids through it more than any other players in the squad. And this was kind of the culture at Anfield in the 80s, was that if anyone came through, the very rare occasions that anyone came through to play from the reserves, they were, so much more was expected of them. You know, 100, 200% was expected of them. Whereas if it was a player from anywhere else around the country, you know, that pressure wasn't there. And it's completely changed now. You know, since Steve Iwuyi came along, since Steve McManaman made it through, you know, Robbie Fowlers and all of these, Steven Gerrards, you know, the scene has, the, you know, all the way up to Trent Alexander-Arnold now. You know, each one of them, you know, certainly from Gerrard, you know, the chance of the Scouser in our team. And it's sang with pride, you know, and they want to see them do well, which is a complete culture change from the support base in the 80s, who would really get on the back of a local player if they felt that they weren't putting in a performance, or they just weren't performing miracles, you know, that might be beyond them, to be fair. So, yeah, at Liverpool, it is very much okay, because I always say one of the best sights of a season, non-trophy winning sights of a season, was always Jamie Carragher celebrating in front of the Bullens on Derby Day at Goodison. You know, it was just one of the best things, you know, that you could see. And yeah, you know, you always want to see one of your own come through, you know, because there's just nothing quite like it.
I like that. I like that a lot. And it leads me in, actually, Johnny, for you. And we've talked a lot about Liverpool and a lot about Manchester United and a lot about Chelsea, but the contemporary version of the FA Youth Cup, I don't mean, what do you see as its purpose? It's a knockout competition for youth team players. I get the literal purpose of it, but what do you see now as the primary role of the FA Youth Cup? And that can link to us, you know, as low down as you want, you know, when you talk about, you know, the teams that enter it at the early stages, but where do you see its place now in the modern game?
I was delighted to talk to Sir Nigel Gibbs, who was knighted for services to playing for Watford for 20 years. He's unofficially Sir Nigel. And his dad was a coach, and he was coached by a guy called Tom Whalley, who, again, not Sir Tom, oddly, just Tom Whalley. And Tom was a Watford player in the 70s, and Graham Taylor came in. He was just about to be moved on, and Taylor said, no, we need you. And Tom Whalley was the kind of Eric Harrison, Steve Highway, Adi Vivash figure for Watford. And interestingly, one of the sources I found was that Watford played in three Youth Cup finals in the 1980s, winning in 1982. We're about to celebrate the 40th anniversary. And in the programme for the second league, it was against Man United again. In the programme, Tom Whalley virtually said, winning the Youth Cup is no big deal. What I am judged on as the coach of the under-18s is getting young talent into the first team, because A, it saves us a lot of money on transfer fees in the 80s, where fewer people are actually going to games. Although Watford had no hooliganism problem, we had a family stand, which was another great thing about bringing in local players. And two, I think it just meant that Watford fans could identify with the local lads. And in fact, this season, the academy is being overseen by Jimmy Gilligan and Richard Johnson, who were both former pros. And Watford are a very good example, albeit we've got our Pozzo farm, where we buy players from South America, put them in a departure lounge in St. Albans, and then sell them on at profit, which is what we're going to do to João Pedro and more. You saw that with Richarlison. But I spoke to Tom Hart, the coach, Tom Hart, which is his name. And he took his side, took Chelsea two extra time. There's a chapter in the book, because I was getting up to the word count, but also I wouldn't turn down the chance to watch Watford play Chelsea in the fourth round of the Youth Cup. And I went, and you'll have to read the book to find out what happened. I'm not going to tell you who won, but it was a much better game than I thought it would be. And the players knew, they were under the lights on a Tuesday night, I think. They knew they had to perform. They were playing on the home turf that one day they might well tread on in the first team. But the problem with Watford now is the same problem with Chelsea. Chelsea, it's a macro level. With Watford, certainly in the Premier League, it might be easier next season when we're in the Championship. You can delete that out if we survive. Or we look like we're surviving. We're not going to beat Burnley. It does appear that it's more likely that a Watford under 18 or under 23 international is going to get in the team. There's a kid called Josh Morris who is playing for the under 23s. He was named on the bench a lot in December and January, and then Danny Rose fell out with Ranieri, and Danny Rose came out of the team, and we signed the Ivory Coast chap who played against England last week, Hassan Kamara, who failed to jump for a header and helped us lose to Norwich. But the point is with the Youth Cup, nowadays, it's great for any young professional. If you are given a scholarship at 16, there's a chance you'll be released at 18. If you have on the CV goal, assist, good run in the Youth Cup. And the example is, remember the name, because it's a fun name, Detlef Esapa Osong, which I'm sure Nottingham Forest fans will turn into a chant for the Youth Cup final on the 30th of April. But young Detlef, here's an example of how good he is. 2-1, Nottingham Forest have taken the lead against Chelsea. Sorry, Gary. Last minute, Warren Joyce, who has a great bellow, was probably going to bellow at him in the corner. But no, Detlef ran towards the penalty area, fell over a leg, penalty, scored the penalty 3-1. And he'd already scored the second goal. So such confidence. And it's on YouTube because Forest TV filmed it. And it went all the way around the world to Malaysia, Ghana and America screened it. But not Chelsea TV, I think. But Detlef Esapa Osong is going to play at Old Trafford. There's a kid for United, Garnacho, who is already training with the Argentinian first team. There's a picture of him and Messi. His performances at under 18 level are known, and the fact that he's played and his goals have got United to the final of a Youth Cup mean that A, people know about him, B, could probably get better sponsors. And we're talking on the day, Jack Grealish and Gucci, Jack Gucci, as he's known as now. But today, the Youth Cup, it is another tournament. My argument is that we should hold it in the same kind of admiration as the League Cup, the EFL Cup. But it is, as Tom Whalley said, to return to Tom Whalley, look, great if we win it. I'm not going to complain if we win. As it happens, Paul Gascoigne helped Newcastle beat Watford in 1985. Nothing was heard from him afterwards. And Ian Bogie was in that team, I think, as well. So it's a good starting point. But as the aforementioned Jadon Sancho proved, or Wayne Rooney, or Phil Foden, or Raheem Sterling, sometimes you can leapfrog the Youth Cup.
And that's a great point, because I was going to come to you, Gary, and obviously Chelsea's incredible recent, and it is almost dominant, is dominant in recent years. Have you, as a Chelsea fan, and this sounds awful, and I don't mean for it to sound awful, I don't know how else to word it, have you taken more interest and fallen more in love with the competition now your team are winning it? Or is it just something that, again, like we've said at the beginning, it's always been there. But actually now, you look at the FA Youth Cup and you look at the Champions League and you look at the contribution of Mason Mount, and all of a sudden, you can't help, I guess, you can't help but be enthused by what's coming.
Yeah. Before I answer your question, I'm going to sort of just pick up on something Johnny said there And I think he's absolutely right what he said about this guy, Wallet at Watford. If the coach of the youth team wins the FA Youth Cup 3 years on the bounce and no players progress to the first team, that guy's getting the sack. Because that's not what he's there for. As far as the club are concerned, that's not... And that might not be nice to say, but I think it's probably true. Anyway, so just moving on to Chelsea. And I think, yes, I have taken more notes, not because Chelsea have been successful, but because there's been a lot more players coming through from the youth team into the first team. So it's been more, it has been more relevant to sort of the first team football. I just want to give you an example. So, I mean, is this sort of, you know, and I will say, I don't defend Chelsea. Chelsea aren't perfect. No club is perfect, you know. But I looked, the last time Chelsea won the Youth Cup was in 2018. Of that team, Tariq Lamptey, Reece James, Mark Guy, Conor Gallagher, Billy Gilmore, Hudson-Odoi are all playing first-team football in the top division. The team they played against, Arsenal, have one player, Emile Smith-Rowe. He's the only player, to best of my knowledge, to come through from there. So, you know, this sort of thing about Chelsea and their own team. Just give us a few figures here. So, looking at the Chelsea, and I'm not saying these are first 11 players, but they're first team players. So you've got Christensen, Chalabar, Reece James, Loftus-Cheek, Mason Mount, Hudson-Odoi, and I haven't included Lewis Hall or Harvey Bale. Tammy Abraham, who scored 15 goals in 30 games in Serie A for Roma. Fikayo Tomori, who's playing first team football for AC Milan, who are the top of Serie A or very near to it. We've got Breuer, who's playing regularly for Southampton, the Albanian guy who comes from the youth squad. Livramento, who has gone to Southampton from Chelsea, youth team. Declan Rice came through the Chelsea youth system. There are 15 players that I've just listed, and I haven't tried very hard to research that. There are 15 players, and they're all under 24, who have come through the Chelsea youth team and are playing first team football for a top league club in either this country or in Italy. The reason I say that is the youth team at Chelsea has become far more relevant to the first team than it used to be for a long, long time.
And can I pick up on something there? Lewis Baker, who, as I was dotting the I's of this book From Kids to Champions, which is out May 2nd, he left. He left Chelsea, went to Stoke, and there was a teeny, teeny, teeny box on the Mail on Sunday sports section. Lewis Baker was supposed to be a first-team player, but he got trapped. Patrick Roberts is now at Sunderland for 6 months, almost on trial. He should have been playing for Man City. Yeah. City kept him for 7 years, parked him in Scotland, went to Troyes in France for a bit. Now, perhaps because of Britain leaving the European Union, clubs are recognising that it's very important to produce their own players. I'm very excited about Broca because he's doing really well. And if he goes back to Chelsea and Chelsea have to get loads of their strikers, including a Belgian chap, off their wage bill, how brilliant would it be if Broca would start for next season for Chelsea with Harvey Bale?
I would say that the change in the Chelsea situation has got nothing to do with Brexit whatsoever in any way, shape or form. It came because of the transfer embargo that we had a few years ago. And all those players I've mentioned came through after that. So, I mean, Brexit, I won't swear what that situation is, but that's got absolutely zero to do with Chelsea. It might have to do with the clubs. I mean, I don't know.
There are 91 other clubs that's got something to do with.
Yeah, perhaps so. But I look at other clubs, you know, and, you know, when I say other clubs, at the top of the league, Man City, how many youth players have they got coming through?
Not enough.
Exactly. Compared to Chelsea, hardly any. Liverpool, I think, are broadly similar. I'm not saying they haven't got any. I mean, you've got the talent of Alexander-Arnold. But there's not that many as I've just described there. So I think the situation, the massive change in the Chelsea situation came about because of the transfer embargo they had. It was a massive boost for Chelsea Football Club. Didn't seem so at the time, but it was.
Do you think, Stephen, that, you know, as Gary's just said there, this sort of interest, do you think that is mirrored, you know, across the country? There is just a genuine interest, you know, we talk about saturation of football and it, you know, 24/7, it's everywhere, but there does seem to be this genuine interest is in what is happening underneath first team level.
Yeah, people always want to know what's coming. You know, you got people out there that pride themselves on knowing what they're, you know, who the next big thing is. You know, so yeah, you know, there is always that. I don't know, that need to know. I mean, we always talk about it, about European games and stuff like that, and the great unknowns that we'd sit and watch on Sports Night, midweek sports special. And that was one of the best parts of football, was learning something. And you don't have that now, because, you know, you can watch any league legally or illegally. You can watch you can watch any team and just chart their progress throughout the entire season online or on your television. So there are no surprises. You know, very few surprises anymore at senior level. But, you know, the great surprises and the great unknowns come from youth football. You know, that's where you can learn and pick up something and find someone new. And you know, you hear these players that are coming, and, you know, you wanna know for yourself. And you'll go to a match, or you'll watch it on the television, and, you know, you'll either buy into that player or you won't, you know, and then you'll get people who'll take pride in the fact that they called it right or they called it wrong. And, you know, it becomes competitive. The Uber fan becomes very competitive over, you know, who they see. You know, we always mock them at Liverpool as being top reds and stuff like that. And that's the phrase that we use. Oh, top red, are we? You know, and that type of thing. So, yeah, you know, there is. But within that, you know, it is great that people are wanting to learn and to know, you know, the next big thing.
Well, it's good for me.
Yeah.
One thing that I do want to sort of chat about, because the end of the book, you've put a great piece in at the end of the book, Johnny, which I absolutely loved, and I loved the idea of it, and we'll come to that. But before then, I suppose it's encapsulated. I'm not quite sure how to word it yet. And I've been trying to, I sort of send some sort of points for consideration, but ultimately, I suppose Gary and you have touched on the career of the youth team coach will always be judged on production of first team players, not FA Youth Cup victories. But in terms of for players, can the FA Youth Cup, A, there's a lot of questions coming now, A, make or break a career? Can it be a hindrance to a career if a player has shone in the FA Youth Cup and then failed to produce when moving up to the first team? And finally, for a third question, just because I asked you enough, is it all, if that is the case, is it all about winning the FA Youth Cup? You know, does anybody remember performances, even in finals or semi-finals, where the team maybe haven't made it? Is reputations of the FA Youth Cup purely built on winning it for players?
Ravel Morrison should be a superstar for England, but for reasons that are well documented, he isn't. It was the Youth Cup that brought him to prominence. Instead, everyone is talking favourably about a guy who was only there in the Europa League game against Midtjylland because Ashley Fletcher was on loan and he was able to slot in when the striker, I can't remember who the striker was who was injured, that guy's Marcus Rashford. We know what's happened to him. So it was the Europa League that broke Marcus Rashford. It was the Youth Cup that broke your Pogbas, your Lingards, and your Morrisons. And Wayne Rooney, of course, did play in the Youth Cup at 15, but we remembered the name because he scored against David Seaman. In terms of coaches, Kieran McKenna graduated from the under-18s to Michael Carrick's number two. Carrick and McKenna were Solskjaer's number twos. Adi Vivash, who did so well instructing the kids at Chelsea, is now working with Mark Robbins, who has been in his job at Coventry for 5 years, which counts as kind of statue-building success. And he is able to tap up Paulo Ferreira or Eddie Newton or whoever is the loan manager at Chelsea and bring in Dujon Sterling or whoever else. And thus Coventry have a shot at Premier League this year because they're doing really well in the Championship. And so Addy will know that winning the Youth Cup is handy for his own reputation, as much, especially because of Chelsea's demands in the last, I don't know, 20 years, for argument's sake. I'm very interested to note that Warren Joyce, who helped bring through Lingard and Rashford as the reserve coach, actually helped Hull escape from, I think they were down in, I think it was the fourth tier.
The Great Escape. That's exactly what it was called, the Great Escape.
And he is now,
I lived through that.
As well, you know. And so he is now going to be bellowing at Old Trafford, trying to help Detlef Esapa Osong. If I say it enough times, that would be the take-home point. Because I'm annoyed because he couldn't make the book because he did stuff far too late. But the Youth Cup is forever there. There are these leagues. There's the Under-18 Development League that is more regular and there are more games. But having that knockout competition, I guess it just focuses the mind. I don't want the Youth Cup to become like the Hearts Senior Cup, which Watford used to put their first team in, but now they put in a mix of 23s and basically whoever's in the gym at the time that they're playing. And they play Hemel Hempstead, Boreham Wood, St Albans City, or the teams in Hertfordshire. So the Youth Cup should become more like the League Cup in estimation than a local senior cup. I hope I touched on everything you asked. If I didn't, do let me know.
That's okay. I fully appreciate it. There was a lot of parts to it. There was a lot I wanted to know. And your opinion as well. Gary, for you, I think it's Steve Bruce. I can remember watching Football Focus. He was picking a side for the FA Cup and they were asking would he play full strength, blah, blah. And he always talked about that, you know, a good pro and a pro has a good career probably gets 10 or 12 chances to win the FA Cup in their entire career. And that's if they have a good career. The FA Youth Cup, those 2 years are so important for youth team players. And this competition is the ultimate shop window. And you only get two attempts at it as a youth team player. We don't know because we've never played in it. But do you think that the competition has the potential to cause harm and hindrance to a career based on the importance that's placed on it by those youth team players?
That's a good question. And I must admit, it's a stupid thing to say, but it's true. It never struck me how few opportunities there are for a player to be successful in the Youth Cup. I don't know is the honest answer. It's a really intriguing question, Stu. I think if we're saying that a successful time in the Youth Cup can boost a player's career, I suppose if we flip the coin over, then a less successful one can probably not boost their career, I suppose. It's just logical. That's a really good question. It's a really good question. There's that many players now that Steve mentioned earlier where Liverpool used to buy players from lower division clubs. Well, it's less the case now. Top clubs tend to have hoovered up those players before, and top clubs now are less inclined to buy players from a third division club or even a championship club when they'll either buy the top international players or it'll be the players that they've sort of hoovered up in the area that would previously have gone to other clubs. I don't know. I suppose the problem is that there's that many. So, I mean, logically, there could be, in that two-season window, there could be perhaps, I don't know, 15 different players, because some will play twice, so 16, 17 different players. Of that 16 players, let's say, arguments say, if three get through to your first team, that's probably a massive bonus for a club. If you're the first team manager, that's what you're looking for. And when I said earlier about, you know, a manager has failed, a youth club manager has failed if they've won the Youth Cup three times the bounce but not brought a player through, what I meant was they haven't failed. But from the club's point of view, the first team is really the most important. Whether that should be the case or not is a different matter. But just one quick point, just picking up what Johnny said, I think if the Youth Cup should be elevated to be as successful as the EFL Cup, oh, that's a brilliant point. And I think absolutely should, because there's that much talent in the youth club and the youth cup compared to sort of reserves who don't get a game in the first team, or often the case in the EFL Cup. I think that's a great point. And yeah, and perhaps in the future that will be the case. I hope so anyway.
I was surprised that Liverpool's Wikipedia page doesn't mention Liverpool's Youth Cup triumphs, because 1996, this was David Tomo, or Birkenhead the Bull, as Jamie Carragher called him. Carragher and Michael Owen, and Steve will know. Michael Owen did wonderful things. He came to public prominence when he scored on his debut, I think, for Liverpool.
He did indeed at away at Wimbledon in a 2-1 defeat. Did Michael Owen? Yeah, his rise was metronomic because he was only on the periphery of that FA Youth Cup winning side. He was substitute. You know, he didn't start the game. Certainly didn't start one of them. And that was against the West Ham side that could boast, I think, Rio Ferdinand and Frank Lampard as well. So you do get these eyes of the storm with the FA Youth Cup, because youth development and it fluctuates greatly across the span, I think. You know, you get a job lot of fine players that come through, and I don't know whether it's a biological imbalance, and then suddenly for 5 years, you know, they stink, and then they'll be great again. And, you know, it just tends to go in cycles, in a way that most of the football levels don't, you know. And so you can often chart that with the attendances of FA Youth Cup finals. You know, when it's on the crest of a wave, you'll get, you know, an aggregate attendance of 40,000 for FA Youth Cup finals. And when it's in a bit of a rut, then it tends to be down at the 7,000 or 8,000. You know, so, you know, you do. I mean, there's been some wonderful teams over the years that have come through. And within that, it works on two sides of the spectrum. You can get players who are so nailed on at that level to be a success, and then they don't fulfill. You know, you'll get others who come storming through completely unexpectedly. You know, it's just the vagaries of youth football. I mean, I always remember an Everton player called Robbie Wakenshaw, who was part of the 84 winning side. You know, played, I think he only ended up playing about three first team games for Everton, but scored on his debut against Man United. And so much was expected of him. And it just didn't happen. You know, I can remember Man City's side in 86. And that was the peculiarity of it. We mocked them at the time because we were winning the double. Everton were missing out on the double. You know, it was the period when Liverpool and Everton just dominated, and Man United and Man City shared the FA Youth Cup final in 86. But, you know, I always found that a fascinating game, you know, over a period of time, retrospectively. You know, you look back on that game and those players who were involved. And, you know, for City, there was like Andy Hinchcliffe. You know, David White was in that side. Paul Lake, Ian Brightwell. There was Steve Redmond was another one, you know, and Paul Molden, who was a really underappreciated player, and went on to play well for Bournemouth and Oldham as well. After he helped City get promotion in 89, but that was the fascinating thing about that. That was probably as good of an FA Youth Cup side that you're likely to see, certainly for the era from which it came from. Yet at senior level, they were relegated from the first division 12 months later. You know, and the thing was that of those players I've just rattled off there, five of them were in the Man City team that took Man United apart 5-1 at Main Road in, I think, September 89, famous occasion. And even then, there was another one. They had Ian Bishop in the side, who'd played, in the 83 Youth Cup final for Everton, who was cast aside by Howard Kendall, and then would be again when Kendall tipped up at Main Road. So, you know, you do get these instances where you get a cluster of players, and it happened with Manchester United with the class of 92. To an extent, the Liverpool squad in 96, David Thompson was a wonderful player. You know, I think when we talked to Jamie Carragher, and we said, but that tellingly, when we spoke to Jamie Carragher, we posed the question, was there any player from that squad that didn't make it that you thought they would? He was very defiant in saying no. He was very, very defiant in saying no, it wasn't. So even at that level, I think that the best players and the ones that come through, you know, they recognise the ones that can come with them as well.
Just a real quick question then for you, for Gary and Stephen, as Chelsea Liverpool fans, obviously as passionate fans of your clubs, you never cast envious eyes at the first team of other clubs in and around you. Is it okay to cast envious eyes at other teams' youth set up, youth provision, youth success?
Well, speaking for mine first, I mean, no, because I think ours is by far the best in the country at the moment.
is it okay to cast envious eyes when it wasn't Gary, when it was only John Terry?
Well, I think that was less to do with the quality of the squad than it was to do with the modus operandi of the club. You know, where they didn't have that bringing the players through. I mean, I take on what you're saying. I just think at the moment, our youth system is producing carbon, it's like a production line of talent at the moment. It's certainly in my lifetime, And that's going back an awful long way. It's the best production line for youth players coming to the Chelsea team that I can remember. Certainly last, I don't know, 50 years or so. So I think they're doing so much right there. And, you know, Ed Brandy is now the youth team coach. It's just perpetuating the system that happened before under Adi Vivash, as Johnny mentioned. So I'm happy. No, I'll sit my own. I'll stay with that at the moment.
Stephen, do you cast envious eyes at Southampton's, or do you just end up buying them?
No, we just sign a kind of like a kit deal with Nike, and then just go out and swipe whoever we want. But you know, going back, a degree. I mean, not in the glory days of the 80s, did we? I mean, it's a retrospect thing. I think you, like I say, you can look at a youth team and pick out players that you think are going to do well, and they don't. So that's the surprising thing about youth football, is that, you know, those you expect to make it might not. Those who you don't expect do. You know, it's so hard to truly judge. There's some very good players in the Liverpool youth squad at the minute, and there's been some names that have been bandied around for over the years that were expected to do great things and never did. So, you know, you can't, there comes no guarantee. The talent is there, but you've got to marry the talent with the mentality. And, you know, that's where the two mix. And if mentality isn't there to match the talent of one individual, then they won't make it. You know, I've sat and watched games and thought, there's a player there, and then they just think without trace. You know, because they've just not got that desire to succeed, that will to kick in all the doors. You know, not everyone can be, you know, a Steven Gerrard and be defiant enough to come through. You know, so many talented players fall by the wayside. It's unreal.
So based on that, then now, Johnny. This is your book. It's your labour of love. It's your work. And I am loath and I refuse to give away the ending. Now, if you want to discuss what you did right at the end, that's fine. And we can chat about it. If you want to leave it as a teaser, then you have absolutely every right to do that. But I'm not going to say a word unless you do.
Is this the final chapter, the conclusion?
I'm talking about the very, very end.
Yeah, I just thought this was a good hook. So if someone did pick up this book, From Kids to Champions, The History of the FA Youth Cup, out May the 2nd on pitch, 1699. that's Laura Wolf training me very well. I thought, well, we all love a best 11. And I hate that phrase. I once saw it written down in a magazine. We all love a spa. I don't, leave me out of it. But we all love a best 11. Those things annoy me, the phrases. My life is great. Got a book out. But I did a best 11. And it was based on players that I'd spoken to or who have won the Youth Cup or have done well. And it's one of those pub debates. And I had to include Sir Nigel Gibbs at fullback. And talking to him was wonderful. It was almost out-of-body experience. It was like when I went to watch Watford's under-23s play last week, and I got to my seat and Kenny Jackett was there because he's got nothing better to do on a weekday afternoon and he could probably get in for free. And I just went, oh, all right. And that was it. You just expect them to be there. But this best 11, I might as well just mention there, are there any Liverpool players there? I'm just flicking through. There's a Liverpool player on the bench, the great George Scott. But I think my central midfield pairing of Nathaniel Chalobah and Bobby Charlton would be great in a team. And I just remember seeing a teenage Nathaniel Chalobah, who already won the Youth Cup, came over from Sierra Leone, played for Chelsea, won the Youth Cup, and then went out at 17 on loan to Watford. And he almost got us promoted, scored a 35-yard goal of the season contender against Leicester City. And that's one of my personal picks. So I do encourage people, based on the book and based on their own recollection, because I would love it if we beat them. I would love it if people could use the Pitch Twitter account at Pitch Publishing and send me their Youth Cup 11 or Youth Cup anecdotes, because it is a tournament where kind of folk history would be beneficial. You've all written books with folk historians popping up in them. Gary's came out the other week, and he came in the football library to talk about it. But I loved trying to find a goalkeeper as well, which I hope readers will be entertained by. But I think that the front four of George Best, Joe Cole, Paul Gascoigne, and Jimmy Greaves is an argument enough to make the Youth Cup something that people should pay attention to, not just because Detlef Esapa Osong, whose name I have got imprinted on my brain, might well be kind of a substitute in the future. I don't know if you have any advances on my best 11, if you want Michael Owen, for instance. And it was lovely to see
I was disappointed you didn't pick David Icke as your goalkeeper.
He does feature in the book, David Icke.
Yeah, he should have been your goalkeeper. And the big question was, did he ride his bike to the game? Because David Icke famously rides a bike.
David Icke wants to just...
Richard Keys has got no knees. And John Kelly.
A really, really quick tangent on that. The Watford Coliseum, which is just to my right, David Icke once played a gig there. He did one of his things. And it was not advertised. And people knew about it because they protested. And they would come up to the bar where I was working at the time, because I'm a writer. And they said, it's a private event. It's a private event. It's a private event. It's closed. And we were told, don't talk about it. And I thought, this is a guy that played against Steve Perryman in the 1970 Youth Cup final for Coventry City.
Graeme Souness as well.
Yeah, that is, there we go. Good. Thank you for reading this book. Although you knew that anyway. But no, David Icke is not in goal.
I you're absolutely right, Johnny. I love a good debate about players that could be missing or should be included in this or could be included in that. They're always subjective, they're always superficial, but you can while away the hours on such topics and discussions. And I was going to ask Gary and Stephen for a player of their choice who should have made it into your starting 11. Obviously, Stephen's rattled off loads already, and clearly they've just got to have a bit of rhyming slang to go with them to be included. So when Stephen puts his rhyming slang Youth Cup 11 on Pitch's Twitter account, that'll be great. Gary, for you, who are you missing?
Well, I think what I'd have to do is promote Peter Billetti from the bench to play in front of the guy that Johnny's picked. But I want to tell you, let people read the book, because there's a really good reason why Johnny's picked the guy he's picked to go in goal. But I think Peter Benetti would probably be a better goalkeeper.
Yeah, he was the cat. And Benetti was part of that team that won two Youth Cups for Chelsea in the 1960s. And I just want to, I'll conclude what I want to say, and then Stu will conclude the thing. I think Chelsea should make a much bigger deal of this team, because they're all in their late 70s now.
Yeah.
This team of 60 and 61 who won back-to-back Youth Cups and then became Drake's Ducklings, who, was it 63 they won something? Yeah. The FA Cup?
Yeah. No, League Cup.
The League Cup, 63. Because Chelsea, they'll find it very difficult next year to sign anyone. And as I said earlier, given that three of the defenders might go to Barcelona, look at Alfie Gilchrist, who is a centre-back who has a shaven head. And despite the fact that they didn't keep a clean sheet the entire run, I think put him next to Saar or whoever else is left in Chelsea's first team next season, I think Gilchrist might do really well. But seeing Lewis Hall and actually going into the document and saying, God, it was really good, Lewis Hall, playing for Chelsea. It was really good, Lewis Hall, making an assist in the FA Cup. And what Lewis Hall is great is his face could fit in that photo from the 1960-61 Youth Cup team.
Yeah. You ought to be in sepia, hadn't you, really? Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, Johnny, yeah.
But yes, Benetti, you're quite right. Benetti should have gone.
guys, like I say, I love doing these podcasts, and I'm always convinced I have the best job in the world as the host, and Johnny may well agree, hosting his own podcast at the Football Library, that the role of the host is brilliant, because you just get to ask the questions you want answering. It, like I say, it's almost like a jukebox. You put your 50p in and all your information just falls out into your ears, which is the best way to go. The book is From Kids to Champions, The History of the FA Youth Cup. Like we say, it's available to buy on the 2nd of May. Pre-orders are now available. It is the FA Youth Cup at Old Trafford on the 30th of April. It's Man United versus Notts Forest. Stephen is chomping at the bit for another Man United victory. I can sense it oozing out of him already.
Up the forest. Gary is,
Gary is, as a Chelsea fan, has decided to let another team have a go at winning it this season. And that all credit for his magnanimousness about that as well. But Johnny, the book is wonderful. Congratulations. Like I said, I love learning. I absolutely love learning. But just sometimes, like I say, you find something to read or to learn about and you just think, yeah, that's filled a massive gap that I didn't even know was in my life. And that's, while it might not sound like the greatest compliment, from I love filling gaps. I love having gaps filled for me. And your book, like I said, now nobody needs to write a book about the FA Youth Cup. Now it's done. It's done and finished, and there it is. There doesn't need to be another one. So congratulations on nailing that first time round.
Thank you so much, and I will enjoy reading your book at the end of the year and Steve's book very, very soon. And I will tune in to the book Stag Do with great eagerness. And thank you so much for having me on. From Kids to Champions is something that I'm very proud of. And as you know, to see your name on a book right next to Paul Gascoigne's face is great. Picture brilliant. Please write another book. Or if anyone listening wants to write a book, you must write it with Pitch. Sports Book Award nominated books, by the way.
Wow, you must be on a retainer for them. You are really good. Gary, enjoyed it?
Yeah, brilliant. I remember I spoke to Johnny on the Football Library, a few weeks ago, perhaps a month or so ago now, and he said about his book coming out. We've got to get Johnny on the centre circle. We've got to get Johnny on the centre circle. And when I read the book, I thought, Gary, that was a wise move because it's a brilliant book. And as you say, Stu, it filled a gap, a massive gap in my knowledge. Going back to the early years in the 60s and the 70s, and the players who have come through from the Youth Cup. And, you know, even there, the conversation we've had today, just something else has come out of this is that should the FA Youth Cup be promoted on a similar way that the Football League Cup is, then definitely this case. But thanks for writing the book, Johnny. Answer a few questions for me. And I still assess, filled a gap in the knowledge.
And by the way, can I just say, you were the first people in the world, apart from Graham and, I can't remember the other chap's name, to spot it. I do know his name because it's here, Graham and Gareth. Apart from them, no one else had read this book. So that is a measure of what I think of your fantastic organisation. And long may it continue.
Bless you.
Thank you very much. Stephen, I was going to ask if you've enjoyed it. Now I'm just going to ask, how would you feel about that?
Oh, honoured and enjoyed it, Ensley. Just a great way to spend an hour and a half. And yeah, John just needs to write another book very, very quickly to come back on.
There's a novel. Johnny, there's a novel.
Johnny, don't listen to him. It's what he does. It's like, it's hypnotic. You sat there going, no, and then Steve, you hear Stephen in your ear.
Yeah,
Write another one. Yeah.
I like to think I could put in requests for books. So Johnny his next football related one needs to be the World Youth Championship, I think.
As I mentioned to Johnny when I was on my Chelsea book, I've only got one more coming out and then I'm done. That's me finished.
Well, you say that, but I never said that after he retired.
It's true. I mean,
it'll be like the Rolling Stones and be back again.
To be collecting my old age pension and I won't be able to write without paying lots of national insurance costs.
I'll find you a job in the Football Library.
It works for me, Johnny, yeah. Yeah. Well, my wife's a librarian. My wife's a chartered librarian. So, I mean, I've got all the skills I can borrow from her. She can teach me all the things she knows.
You're in.
Okay, buddy.
To be fair, I am just going to call Stephen the Book Whisperer from now on. That's clearly his new title. He just whispers in your ear about writing a book. He is the Book Whisperer.
Yeah. This is what you need to do.
Guys, like I say, it's been brilliant. Johnny, thank you so much for coming on. If you listen to Stephen, brilliant. Write another book. You're more than welcome. If you've got the mental willpower to block him out, congratulations. Let me know how you do it.
World Youth Championship. World Youth Championships. Especially 79.
All that's left for me to say is thank you for listening and please join us again next time on the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.